my first client, 10 years in business, never getting past 700,000 in revenue. In her first year working together, we went from 700,000 to 2.4 million. In her second year, she went from 2.4 million to 5 million. It was the story that set in motion the belief that I needed that this program worked.
Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show, an entrepreneurship podcast that delivers you real stories and advice from successful founders and CEOs in various industries. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, a longtime professional recruiter, executive coach, thought leader, and creator of talent-centric organizations. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Authentically Successful. I'm Carol Schultz, and joining me today is Louis Scott, owner and founder of Eight Figure Firm Consulting, where he has helped scores of law firms find success, reach a combined total of over $1 billion in revenue, and employing more than 3,000 employees nationwide for the firms that he has helped. He holds a law degree from John Marshall School, Law School in Atlanta, Georgia, and is an in-demand speaker on elevating and scaling businesses. Luis, glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
I was so interested when we had our first call. You know, you got your start in personal injury law. Tell me a little bit about that journey and your journey to being a managing partner of Bader Scott Injury Lawyers, which was one of the fastest growing law firms in the U.S. that you just left this month, in fact.
Yeah. So I didn't think I was smart enough to be a lawyer, to be honest with you. And I had a really great mentor, which is a lesson that I tell people all the time. If you find a mentor, hold on to them and treat them really well, because they can really elevate you, you know, from an emotional and mental standpoint. But I had a mentor who was a judge. He was a business law professor, and he gave me the confidence that I could become an attorney. And so I went to become an attorney. I was working at a law firm already as as a receptionist. And then I became a legal assistant, a marketing person, went to law school, became an attorney, and then became a managing partner of a firm that I worked for 15 years. So that's how I actually got into becoming a managing partner. And then from there, we built a multi seven-figure business. We parted ways. I started my own firm, which I created a multi seven-figure run rate within about 5 or 6 months. And then I went to my third firm, and which was the last firm, and I became the managing partner of that firm. And now I help firms grow and scale to eight figures and beyond.
Right. I want to spend a little time talking about, you know, you said how you grew Bader Scott in such a short period of time and really, you know, grew that to a seven-figure firm so short. What did you do and how did you know to do what you did? Or was it, there was hunt and peck involved?
I mean, I think that growing in any kind of business and maturing as an entrepreneur is really all about failing. And yeah. You know, I'd love to take 100% credit for the growth of the business, but obviously I had a business partner who was very skillful in marketing and very skillful in negotiating contracts that gave us a tremendous upside. And so that was really a large part of it was the marketing side. And I think that as entrepreneurs and business owners think about growing, they really need to start asking the question, do I have the right marketing strategy? What I did and what was my greatest skill was being an operator. I found myself being gifted in the operations side, but not in the traditional Six Sigma type of operations. I was a leadership operator. And so I always classify COOs in four categories. There's the COO who's marketing focused, the COO who's finance focused, the COO who's systems focused, and the COO who's leadership focused. And I was the leadership focused COO. So I spent a lot of time working on developing leaders, and that was my primary contribution to the business.
So tell me how you, because that's something that I talk a lot about is leadership and, you know, how much poor leadership we have in this country. Mm-hmm. How did you figure out and what did you do from training these leaders as a leadership COO?
So for me, it was all about figuring out where people were from a leadership standpoint, and then trying to hone and develop their skills. And there were three primary things that I did. I hosted a book club where we went over a book on leadership on a monthly basis. I did that for about several years. I also hosted a leadership lunch and learn, which was a 2-hour leadership seminar that I would do every single month. Mm-hmm. Because part of leadership is also connection and building connectivity between your leaders.
Agreed.
So I wanted to create synergy. And then the third thing that I did was hosting my meetings, and I never left an opportunity to build my team. So in my weekly meetings, or even in our quarterly meetings, I spent a lot of time doing workshops and teaching and so forth, because there's a book called The Coaching Habit, and it says that even if you only have 10 minutes with a leader, spend that 10 minutes coaching them. And so I really kind of locked into that. And I did that in all of my firms, but I've also done that in 8-figure firm. That's what I teach people is, you know, really care about the individual, help them grow personally and professionally. And if that happens, you're going to get more productivity out of your business.
If you look back on your time at Bader Scott and the leadership as you said, being a leadership COO, what would you say are some of the mistakes that you made? And how did you determine that you were actually, something wasn't working?
Mistakes wise, I could write a book about
most of us can, right?
And, yeah. And mistakes are just one of those things that they're just part of life. I think if I were to list mistakes, I would say holding on to people who longer than they needed to be held on to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was trying to make everyone happy. Like, you can't make everybody happy. You can create a great environment and so forth, but trying to make people individually happy. I think that was a problem. Overestimating what people could do for you. You know, I have the 70% rule, which is people are only going to work at 70% of the capacity that you're willing to work. So if you're working in an environment where you expect 100 units of something to be done, your team's only going to do about 70% of that. So 70 units. And the answer to that, to the question as to why, is very obvious. And it's because they don't make as much as you do. So they're not going to put in the effort that you do. I mean, this idea that an employee is going to work 110% your capacity is fantasy. That's not going to happen. I think we were expecting people to work as hard as we did. And that just didn't happen. So there was a lot of people failures, which is one of the reasons why I tell my clients, focus on people, focus on the leadership, focus on building people. People will build your business. I didn't make up that cliche. It's a phrase. I'm not sure who said that, but who coined that phrase. But focus on the people, and because they're the greatest asset, especially in a service-based business. They're your greatest asset. And so that, of all those failures, that's what I learned, is the more you focus on people, the better and more efficient your business becomes.
Well, I mean, you know, you're preaching to the choir, because that's what my entire book is about, right? And I'll tell you what, it's one of the reasons that I wanted to interview you, right? Because, you know, I interview a lot of people, and a lot of people think that they are, you know, you can call it people focused. I call it talent centric, right? It's the same thing, really. And most people really don't, when the rubber meets the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think people say that a lot of leaders are like, I love my people and so forth, but really they're only thinking about the financial benefit.
That's exactly
that the
right.
Give them.
Yeah.
And there's a very big difference between loving people for the transactional purpose and loving people for the relational purpose.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no question. And, you know, I've had people say, oh, you know, we really can't afford to do this right now. And I'm thinking, you can't afford not to do this because of the ROI you'll get, right?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, my dad used to always tell me, you can't outspend your generosity. And that doesn't mean you give everybody every single thing that they want from a financial perspective. It means be generous with your time, be generous with your knowledge, be generous with your money, be generous with your service. If you're generous, people will give you in return, but you have to be generous first before you get the return.
Right. So you founded 8-figure firm consulting in April of 2020. So almost, almost 4 years ago now.
Yep.
In the middle of a pandemic. And you were still working with Bader Scott. So is the reason you've left there now so you can fully focus on this new firm?
Yeah. So my desire from many years ago was to be a nationally recognized author and speaker. Like, I always had that desire. Mm-hmm. There are people that it doesn't take time for, but it's taken time for me to get there.
I understand.
And after I had put in the work that I felt was sufficient, I wanted to go and pursue my passion. And there's nothing better than stepping into your destiny. And for me, leaving the law firm and going into 8-figure firm was a personal decision related to my desire to just fulfill my destiny, which is to walk into that space of consulting, coaching, authorship. Now I've written two books and speaking around the country. So Now I can focus 100% in helping my clients.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So tell me, let's talk a little bit about Eight Figure Firm. How are you? I mean, let's look at how you're marketing it, first of all, right? And how people are finding you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so Eight Figure Firm teaches a specific technique of marketing, and we follow the same plan. And the plan is that you spend 25% of your revenue on marketing. And there's three primary things you do until you have the money to spend on what I call mass media. But one of them is to maximize your referrals. And there's three types of referrals that we try to maximize. The second thing is having a well-defined and crafted customer journey, client journey, where people are being taken on a journey, and they're not just organically walking through the process. And then the third thing is having the 5 points of your digital strategy. And so we work in every single one of those areas, and we're heavy on social media. We do a lot of branding, a lot of lead generation, because people are predictable, and it doesn't matter what kind of business you have, what kind of service you have, people will succumb to the power of marketing. And this idea that people don't respond to marketing is not true. Everyone responds to the marketing that appeals to them. And so your goal is to try to create the greatest appeal that you possibly can. And so that's what we've done. And we spend a lot of time creating content, and we give away a lot of free content. I mean,
yeah,
if you join our email list, you get 6 emails a week of value-driven content plus a resource tool every single week free of charge. You could actually, I've actually told somebody this, if you just did everything that we send in our email, you'd build a multi-7-figure business just doing that without even having to pay us. And so we spend a lot of time delivering content to people that is going to help them add value to their law firms.
That's terrific. Tell me a little bit more about your branding that you were just talking about. How are you branding your firm?
So in my book, The King of Growth, and I'm getting ready to release a second edition with the audiobook, I added 20,000 additional words to the book because I now have 4 years of experience working with 130 law firms. And so I have all this anecdotal evidence. And in the book, in chapter one, I talk about the brand. And the brand is actually much more simple than people make it seem. It's your vision, mission, values, service standards, your unique selling proposition, and you. That's your brand. That's what your brand is. And so you have to get really clear on your vision, on your mission, on your values, and your service standards. And when you get clear on that, everything that you communicate is through that lens. So I'll give you an example. Our vision is to be the leading authority in law firm building. So guess what? A lot of our marketing has to do with being the authority from an educational standpoint on how to build law firms. Our mission is to help 100 law firms reach 8 figures in predictable revenue. Well, guess what? A lot of our marketing has to do with getting to 8 figures. We tell people there's a 5-year plan from 1 to 10 million. You can do it in 5 years. You know, our core values, extreme generosity, unshakable faith. We coach people and tell people, you can do this. You should believe. Give more content. Give more resources. Give more to your community. So everything that we brand online is consistent with those elements. And then the last thing is me. Like, I'm a unique selling proposition within itself. We have a USP, but I also have one, and you have one, and everybody has one, because two people saying the same thing will have different results. And that's what makes us unique. And that's why there's no competition, really.
That's really, is there anybody else out here doing this and they're just not as successful as you are?
Oh no, there's people more successful than me doing this, and they've been in the game a lot longer. And so, one of the things that they have on me, so there's several organizations that I consider my competitors, even though they're much larger than me, they have time. Some of them have been in business 10, 15, 20 years. We've been in business 3.5 years. So they have time on me, but, don't worry, we're going to expedite that with technology and because we have an amazing product.
You also mentioned, how you're reaching out to find, how are you actually finding your prospects? Is it through, you know, your social media, through your newsletter? I mean, not everybody knows who you are. I didn't know who you are when we first spoke, of course, but I'm also not an attorney.
Right.
So what are you doing to, bring in more prospects?
The first thing that we have to understand about marketing is you can't saturate the market, right? Not everybody's going to know about you. I was at an event recently and I was talking to somebody about John Mayer. Now, in my mind, everyone knows who John Mayer is. And this person—
The singer?
The singer, John Mayer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, all these awards, accolades, 100 million albums sold. Yeah. And she looked me dead in my eye and says, I've never heard of John Mayer before.
Right.
Never heard of him.
Yeah.
And so I went and got his top hits. played them for her. Never heard of them. She's never heard of this bird. Like, you can't saturate the market. So that's the first thing.
And right.
So
it's very
common for me to meet people and they're like, I don't know who you are. And it's like, that's interesting. Cause like I get hundreds of leads a month. Right. But here's the thing. The way that we reach people is number one, paid social media. Number two, putting a lot of organic content. Mm-hmm. Number three, email. Number four, speeches and networking. And number five, referrals. Like that's the basis of our entire marketing plan. Mm-hmm. And if you put your brand out, you will attract your brand. I always tell lawyers, you're a criminal lawyer. Do you get family law cases? Not really. Do you get estate planning cases? Not really. Because you get the cases that you market for. And the estate planning guy doesn't get personal injury. And the family law person doesn't get, wills, trusts, and estates. You get what you brand for. And so we brand for lawyers who make $1 million or more. And that's who responds to our ads.
Interesting. So you mentioned paid social media, Luis. What types of paid social media are you using?
We do everything. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, Shorts. I mean, anything that we don't do Snapchat, but we do TikTok as well. Anything that you can actually reach our target audience, we do. Because step one in figuring out where you market is finding out where your client resides. Well, where can they be found, right? And so once we realize that they could be found on these platforms, we spend money pushing the ads, creating both a lead generation campaign and a brand awareness campaign. So that's kind of like our two-prong analysis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's interesting to hear that things like TikTok and Instagram is where your prospects are. I always just kind of think that that's where all the kids are.
I mean, well, our target audience is 35 to 55, and they're on Instagram, they're on Facebook. You just have to try, it may take more money for somewhere like TikTok or Instagram. But there's some additional benefits to marketing yourself on social media unrelated to lead generation. One is you're creating social proof. You're developing the authority that you're the person who should be followed. And so when people find me on social media and they see that I have thousands of followers, that's impressive. When they see my videos have thousands of views, that's impressive. And so I think it's important to look at the additional benefits of social media marketing and not just the desired benefit. The desired benefit is leads. The additional benefit is you could actually craft an entire business out of social media if you become influential enough. And so that's part of our strategy.
That's really interesting. So walk me through the program a little bit that people are signing up for.
So initially I wrote an ebook called The 9 Principles of Exponential Growth. And it was a 3-pillar system. It was your foundation, your intention, and your transformation. I've now expanded that into the book, The King of Growth, which the second edition comes out in February, and then a ton of additional resources. But it's a tailor-made program where depending on where you are, whether you're a million or 3 million or 8 million or 10 million, we take where you are and we ask the question, what's missing? And then we start working from there. What's missing for most people, believe it or not, is they're building their business on a weak foundation. I would say 90% of the businesses that we consult do not have a foundation. And if they have a foundation, it's one of those foundations that nobody knows about. So they'll have vision, mission, and values, but they have to pull it out of their cabinet and dust it off. You know, I see them, hey, what's your vision? Well, let me go to my filing cabinet and figure out what my vision is. Like, that's not a strong foundation. And so we usually spend some time starting with the foundation. That's where we immediately start. And so our program is tailor-made. There's not a one-size-fits-all. Because the $8 million firm has a different issue and a different problem to be solved than the $1 million firm. So we do a discovery call, and from there, we assess what their problems are. On average, we find anywhere between 10 and 20 missing items that they have not completed. And when you start completing those items, it creates a tremendous momentum. Momentum leads to acceleration. Acceleration is what leads to scale.
That's terrific. Mm-hmm. What would you say are the biggest challenges that you're facing with your firm at this point?
I mean, for me, the biggest challenge is finding coaches who genuinely care about clients. The coaching business is filled with charlatans.
Don't get me started, Luis. I wrote a whole article about that in Inc. magazine.
Yes. You know, there's a lot of charlatans out there in the coaching business who have never achieved anything, mm-hmm. and who jump from coaching business to coaching business touting their success. Yeah. And they don't really have the experience to navigate hard conversations mm-hmm. with clients. And so finding these coaches that have the relevant experience, that have the street mm-hmm. credentials to be actually an authority in the industry, and that can actually implement our system has been quite a challenge. And I've interviewed dozens of these people, and some of them, they go on to, you know, we don't hire them, and they go on to start their own consulting business, and they become successful. Because everyone's desperate for somebody, and their price is right. And, you know, they charge somebody mm-hmm. $3,000 a month. They get four clients. They're making $150,000 a year. They don't have to really do much, because at $3,000 mm-hmm. a month, there's not a lot of pressure to help somebody grow if you're only charging them $3,000 mm-hmm. a month. And, mm-hmm. For us, like our top program's $240,000 a year. Like, I have mm-hmm. a lot of pressure, to make our system work.
And that's so right.
It's, I think that's the biggest challenge, is finding people who are legit street credentialed people. But then the second thing is mm-hmm. making sure those people aren't coming in to just steal your proprietary system and then repurpose it as their own, because that's a challenge. I mean, I had an issue already where a competitor trademarked our signature conference. Like, they got to it before I did. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, that people do stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could distract this entire conversation into a total different conversation, talking more about that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, the whole thing around coaching is that really most people don't have any training, mm-hmm. or they've been to one Tony Robbins course. Or you've met those people, I assume, right. Or they've, or, you know, two Tony Robbins courses, or they've gone to some other course that, you know, lasted 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want a neurosurgeon operating on me that only had 2 or 3 months of experience.
And the stakes are really high in business, right? When you think
yes, they are.
Don't get me wrong. The stakes are high in brain surgery as well, but the stakes are high in business. You could lose your entire livelihood.
Right.
You could lose all of your money. You could lose everything. And you could find yourself in foreclosure and in bankruptcy and mm-hmm. and real psychological and emotional damage. Like, we're talking about serious consequences.
Yeah.
And I do agree. Like, there's people out there who don't have the experience. That's one of the reasons when I hired my first several coaches, I told them, you're not going to touch a client until you do 1,000 hours of coaching with me, which meant I had to put in a significant amount of work, over a year mm-hmm. of work, for them to get in 1,000 hours. That's a big investment. What if the person just left? And so, but it's so important for when you work with the coach in our business, they are credentialed because they worked with me for 1,000 hours before they started talking to you.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think part of the other issue is most people, to your comment about charlatans, mm-hmm. don't understand what coaching actually is.
Right.
Most people, when they describe what coaching is to me, it's being an advisor. Mm-hmm. And that's not what coaching is, right? Coaching is experienced coaches, well-trained coaches, all kind of explain this a little bit differently, but ultimately it's being a committed listener. And, you know, you as the coach can see something that you can see the things about your client they can't see for themselves, because mm-hmm. those things are living in a blind spot.
Of course.
Right. It's like one of the examples I use is when I went in to first started, I have gated horses. So mm-hmm. when I went in to start training my stud colt to gate when he was 3 years old, I went to somebody I know very well who's could train him, help me teach him how to gate. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I'd never had to teach one to gate from scratch.
Right.
And, you know, Rick, you know, when you're working with a trainer like that, right. I'm in the saddle, he's on the ground. He can see the things that I'm doing that I can't see or even feel necessarily.
Right. Right.
Right. To then start working with me on those things. And that's just a simple way of describing what great coaching really is, right? Because that was living in a blind spot for me. Oh, I didn't realize that. So now I can adjust the way I'm doing something. And oh, look, he, instead of taking one step and starting to trot, he would take three steps and start to trot, right? So it was all, you know, both the horse and myself learning how to work together in that, right? But I couldn't have done that without somebody on the ground watching me.
And there's a big gap in lawyer business building. And that is that most lawyers are taught to spend between 3% and 8% on marketing. And I have a formula where you spend 25% on marketing. And so most people are scared to do that. But because of our experience, our past success, we come in and we go, listen, 100 people have done this, 25 eight-figure firms. I've done it myself. Spend 25. You won't regret it. And when they do it, their business just blows up. And so we also provide that support. It's like, trust me on this. You know, I feel like Aladdin sometimes. Do you trust me? Like, come jump on this magic carpet ride because it's going to be phenomenal.
Luis, do you actually have an ideal client?
For me, an ideal client is someone above $1 million who feels stuck and has the ambition of eight figures. That's who our ideal client. I love working with a $3 to $5 million firm that's been there for 4 or 5 years. I love working with a firm that's $8 million that has a totally messed up marketing campaign. Like those people instantaneously, you know, I have a firm that $4 million budget, they turned only about a $600,000 profit. And I came in and literally within a couple of months, we were saving them already $30,000 a month. So we almost doubled their profit without sacrificing their results. And to me, those are huge successes. My entire fee was paid for in a matter of 2 or 3 months. So now everything else is icing on the cake.
Exactly. It's funny that you mentioned about a client, but tell me like a client success story that you're particularly proud of.
My first client, it's my favorite story. And she was the one that hired me in April. The business started in April, from a standpoint of like, she agreed to coach with me, but I don't think she actually started working with me in June. But in her first year, after 10 years in business, never getting past 700,000 in revenue, in her first year working together, we went from 700,000 to 2.4 million. And then after that, in her second year, she went from 2.4 million to 5 million. It's my favorite story. It was the story that set in motion the belief that I needed that this program worked. And, you know, now almost 150 law firms later, history is still being written, but I believe we'll reach 1,000 firms in the next 5 years.
Do you only work with personal injury attorneys?
Oh, no. So that's another misconception. Only about 20% of our firms are personal injury. 80% of our firms are estate planning, criminal, immigration, family law, elder law, probate. I mean, it runs across the spectrum.
So the principles that you use work across the board, or do you have to do some, is there some tweaking to be done based on their business?
No, the principles not only work across the board, they work in other industries. We also work with two tax accounting firms. One of them, we've already doubled their revenue in 1 year. They went from 800,000 to 1.7 million in 1 year. And then I've also helped my friend who had a video production company. We took his company from 50,000 to 500,000 in 1 year as well. So the principles work across the board because they're just business principles. And once you believe, because belief is a big part of this, and once you believe, everything just starts coming into play.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So you currently have 25 employees. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about, you know, you already talked about coaching and how you spend 1,000 hours with them over a year. But tell me a little bit about your talent strategy.
Like talent acquisition, you mean?
Yeah, for your own firm, yeah. So like, what's the strategy look like when you're thinking, okay, I need to hire these types of people. Mm-hmm. How do I go about doing that? And then what are some of the challenges that you've experienced?
The best way to get talent is through referrals. The majority of the people that we've hired has been referred through people that were already working with us. And so I have one person who's referred 2 or 3 people. I have another person who's referred 2 or 3 people. So we've really built because people who are good tend to know people who are good. And so I always start there. Tell me if you know anybody who's looking for a job. That's where we start. The second place is LinkedIn. Believe it or not, I have been shocked at the proactive outreach that I've received for Eight-Figure Firm. Over a dozen consultants have reached out to me asking if they can interview for a job. And I think that that's part of us developing our brand online. And I have a mindset coach, and she tells me, like, once you believe, the universe works in your favor. And I really think that that's what's happening. I mean, the doors of opportunity just unlock. I very rarely have to go search for people. People are just searching for us. They're reaching out. They're asking if they can work with us. I have vendors and friends saying, hey, I know somebody who may be looking for working at to work in a coaching company. And it's happened pretty organic. So we don't put out ads or anything like that. We just continuously brand ourselves, ask for referrals, and people proactively reach out. But LinkedIn has been a good place for people to reach out.
That's terrific. So if you look back over the almost now 4 years that you've been in business, have you experienced, what kind of turnover, if any, have you experienced, and why do you think that was?
So I, in the initial onset, I did experience some turnover. I had probably three or four people who quit. The reason was because I did not have a business that gave confidence to the team that it was going to last at the time. You know, I was kind of treating it a little bit more like a hobby. Yes, I had written a business plan and a budget, but it was kind of a side thing for me. And so we were trying to grow it, but I didn't have 401k. I didn't have insurance. I didn't have any of those protections that people wanted. Mm-hmm. And the people that I hired were also, frankly, they were very young. Three of the four were right out of college. So they didn't find the business that appealing, right?
Right.
You come out of college and the first thing on your mind is, how do I work for a law firm consulting company? Like, I don't think that that's anybody's dream in college. And so that happened. But then I found one, and I always tell about the power of one. I found one young person, and she was 23 years old. She's now been with me over 2 years, and she was the one that started referring people to us. But that person believed, and she believed for a reason unrelated to me. When her parents heard the job that she had, that was flexible, good pay, and she had told them I was a good boss, they basically told her, you'd be an idiot to leave that place. You ride out that place until you can't stand it anymore. And that's what she's done. And it's been incredible. And that was the genesis of me finding another person who believed, and then another person who believed. And now it's just people believe. And for me, it's about creating a workplace where people want to come to work. And I think I do a pretty decent job doing that. Now people love coming into work.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. Do you actually have an office, or do you have people that are remote? What's that look like?
So we're in the process of transitioning office spaces, and we're building out an office right now. That's going to be one of the cool offices. Like, we're going to have lounges and all kinds of cool stuff, you know, really big break room and all that. But, yes, we do have an office. People come in. We currently have come as you need to. Except on Mondays. Mm-hmm. On Mondays, everyone's required to come into the office. Every other day, people can come in when they need. What I have found is people still come in 3-4 days a week, even when they don't have to come in. Because when you create an environment where people want to come to work, they want to come to work. Like, we work with each other 40-50 hours a week. Why not build awesome relationships with that team? And so I love building relationships with a team and creating just a great space for us to gel together.
And this office is in Atlanta, correct? Where you are?
It's in a suburb of Atlanta, but...
Well, I mean, it's in the Atlanta metro. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So have you found at all that limits you in where you can find the best people?
So we do hire remote. We have VAs. Okay. I think we have about 6 or 8 VAs that work all over the country, from South Africa, Argentina, Mexico, Honduras. Yeah. So we do hire VAs as well. And I never limit where I'll find talent. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I do like having a core group in our main office, because that I work well with people as well. You know, I want to be around people. I like the energy I get from people.
Yep.
And so it's not been a limitation for me, because I am open to virtual workers.
Fantastic. What would you say is the most outdated advice being disseminated in your business, in your industry, really, not in your personal business?
In the legal industry?
Well, in the legal industry, that's you said there's a lot of these other firms that are, you know, help, that are consulting firms to help people build their firms. So,
I mean, there's a lot of things that I think are outdated. One being the marketing spend. I think it's outdated. You can't compete on 3 to 8% marketing spend in today's environment. Mm-hmm. I think the idea that good lawyering is enough is an outdated advice. Good lawyers end up broke. Good marketers end up rich. And so if you want to mm-hmm. make money as a lawyer, you got to be able to market yourself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's outdated that the idea that people come, that compensation is enough to get your team to produce. I have a theory. It's very controversial. And that's compensation is the bare minimum you pay. So people show up. Like, I just want you to show up to work. That I pay you for that. I get you to produce by caring about you, growing you personally and professionally, creating a great culture. That's how you produce. Compensation is just to get you to show up. Most people disagree with that. But that's one of the reasons why I have found great work. I mean, I consider almost my entire team A players. That's a very, very uncommon thing.
I agree. And, you know, I can see why, having been in the business I've been in for over 30 years, why people might think that, you know, paying somebody, not that you're paying them the bare minimum to get them to work, but I think I want to be clear that I'm understanding what you're saying as well as anybody else who might be listening to that, thinking, well, I can just pay them this much and they'll show up.
Oh, no,
that's not really, which is not the case.
That's not what I mean is that
I will make sure nobody misunderstands that. That's the reason. Yeah,
and let me just expand on that. There is a belief that you should do what I say because I pay you. Mm-hmm. And my belief is when you pay them, the only thing you get from that is that they show up. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing you get. If you want them to produce, you got to do more than just pay them.
That's okay. Very good. Thank you for qualifying that. Yeah. I just didn't want anybody to miss what your actual point was.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. You know, and a lot of people, you know, people get angry about, oh, you know, this or that about their job and I'm not being paid enough or whatever that might be that they're complaining about. And, you know, my first thought is, well, you accepted the job based on that.
Of course. I mean, I think
where's your accountability in this, employee?
well, but the thing is, we have to educate employees. Employees are not business owners, and
that's right.
Business owners are really, really good at projecting what they believe, what they think on their team and on their clients. And your team and your clients are not you. You're in a very small percentage of people. And so we have to start asking, what is it like to be an employee? I was an employee for 12, 13 years before I became a business owner. And I feel like I understand how much it sucks to not get a raise. I know what it's like to be underpaid. I know what it's like to not have a good work environment and not being able to do anything about it. And so I spend a lot of time trying to reverse that. So we have regularly scheduled reviews. I never want you to worry that I'm not going to have your review, that I'm not going to acknowledge what you did. That's really important. And I think that if you've never been in the seat of the employee and you've always been an entrepreneur or a business owner, you will fail to see that they don't think like you. They don't behave mm-hmm. like you. They don't desire mm-hmm. things like you.
Right. So given the growth that you've experienced here over the last just about 4 years, where do you see investing your resources for continued growth here over the next year or so?
So our plan this year is to continue to develop our product. And so one of our company mm-hmm. goals is to become an education center this year. We're going to be releasing several books and a mini book series on growing your law firm, 12 mm-hmm. webinars, as well as another 100 pieces of law firm building content and three courses. And so our focus is on the product. We're going to create an education center that there may be a bigger consulting firm. There may be a bigger consulting outfit out there. They're just not going to be more skilled at growing law firms than we are. And I think we'll win in the end.
So I've heard you not actually describe it this way, but what I've been listening and hearing about what I think your culture is, but how would you actually describe your culture and what makes it unique?
this is going to be such a young word to say, I guess. Vibey. My culture is vibey. It's the vibe. Like you come into our place and you just feel the vibe. There's just energy.
Yeah.
There's energy. There's excitement. People are really excited. You know, I had an employee, who, when I did her review, she straight up to, cause we have a place of radical candor and transparency. And she literally told me, this is an employee of 4 years. And she said, I really don't love what I'm doing. I'm just being honest with you, but I don't know what I want in life, but I love working for you. I love working for you. And so I'm going to stay here. Like, number one, I love that transparency. Number two, it gives me an objective to try to find the place where she feels satisfied. But number three, it makes me feel good that I'm doing everything I can to retain someone who doesn't love the job, right? And so that's the kind of culture we have. We have a culture where even people who don't love the job are willing to put in max effort because the culture's great, the environment's great. And so, yeah, when you walk into our offices, it's vibey. It's everyone has energy. We have a good time. We laugh. Our favorite thing is after we host a conference 3 times a year. The Sunday after the conference, we do a brunch with bottomless mimosas. Like, that's our culture. I love it. It's a great time.
That's terrific. Tell me a little bit about a day in your work life. What do you spend your time doing?
The majority of my time, I have two different primary jobs. One is building the business, obviously, and the other one's consulting. I'm working with 25 law firms personally, so I do spend about 25 hours a week consulting. The rest of my time is spent in creation, and so I'm working on producing 200 pieces of content per month. I also do 4 podcasts per month personally for my podcast show. I guest appear on podcasts. I'm now being asked to speak around the country on radio and TV related to growing businesses. And
awesome.
Then in addition to that, I'll be releasing 5 books this year. So I'm writing like I'm running out of time. I feel like I'm Hamilton.
How do you spend your time when you're not working?
With the family. I only have 2 things in my life that I do. One is family and one is working. If I'm not working, I'm with the family. If I'm not with the family, I'm working. Some people say that's not a good lifestyle. That's what satisfies my soul, is knowing that I'm making an impact in the lives of people in the community. And I don't want to waste time watching TV. I don't like watching TV. Every once in a while I watch stand-up comedy. I do love sports, and so I go to sporting events, but usually I go with the family. So it's either a family thing or it's a work thing. And to me, I feel very fulfilled.
That's fantastic. Is there anything I haven't asked you, Luis?
Well, you haven't asked me how long does it take to become successful. I love that question a lot.
Okay, then tell us.
I think the answer is it takes the amount of time that it takes you to develop yourself into the person that's worth the business that you want and the lifestyle that you want. And so focus on personal growth, focus on personal development, and you'll be able to have the business of your dreams.
I love that. I will mention again, your new book, your updated book coming out in February. By the time this show goes live, it will be live, and we will put a link in the show notes to it for you if you like. You know, and with that said, Luis Scott, founder of 8-Figure Firm Consulting, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed as well.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Authentically Successful Show. Don't forget to click follow to hear more, and please leave us an honest review and rating so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories. If you're interested in being my next guest, please check the episode description for information to apply. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.